This is an iHeart podcast.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
I have a confession to make. I've made them to you before. I always try to give it to you as straight as humanly possible, unless I'm covering up various crimes I've committed. And here's a confession. The special tonight is on the Clintons. The Clinton scandals and whatnot. And I know you're probably asking yourself, why would you do a special on the Clintons at this point in time? Because I miss them. I miss the Clintons. And let me explain. I'm not defending the way the Clintons have conducted themselves over the years. But I try to, as much as humanly possible, when I consume politics, try to just look at it as if it's a game. I know it's not. These things matter. Real lives are lost. Real fortunes are made. Fortunes are lost. Lives are ruined. Lives are made. Politics is important. Politics guides the future of a country. I know politics matters. It does. But I view all of life as a little bit of a game, as entertaining as I can possibly make it. I enjoy politics. I get a kick out of it. It's a story. It's a movie. It's a book. And what makes a great movie? What makes a great book? The bad guy. It's not the guy you cheer for. He helps, sure. Every story needs a protagonist you're rooting for. But a story must have a bad guy you hate. A bad guy who's good at being bad. That's what makes a great movie. That's what makes a great book. You know why the movie Die Hard is so legendary? It's not because of Bruce Willis. Yeah, Bruce Willis was awful. Awful. He was awesome in there, murdering a bunch of bad guys. He's got the muscles out for the ladies, murdering dudes for the dudes. It's the good guy winning, a New York cop against the bad guys. And that's, if Bruce Willis was just that, if it was only about Bruce Willis, that movie would have been forgotten 2 minutes after it was played. The bad guy, played by Alan Rickman, he's what made the movie Die Hard. He is what made the movie Die Hard. The bad guy makes the movie. The Clintons, they're so dirty. I almost admire it. Maybe admire's not the right word I want to use there, but I went to community college. I'm astounded by it. I marvel at it. That's the best way I can describe it. They're filthy dirty. And because I'm 39 years old, they were really my first introduction to that kind of dirty, scummy politics. I'm not going to do this thing where I pretend that Republicans are all saints and all the Democrats are scumbag, corrupt, you know, losers. I'm not doing that. But keep in mind, 39, my first two presidents were Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Ronald Reagan, I realized there was some Iran-Contra stuff and whatnot, but for the most part, he's your grandpa. Even Democrats liked Ronald Reagan for the most part. You want to sit on his lap and have a Werther's Original. Tell me about the war, Grandpa. It's who Ronald Reagan was. George H.W. Bush, kind of a nerd, but a war hero? Cool war hero? Got a cool World War II story? Look it up if you don't know it. CIA? And then he gets there, and yeah, he only lasted 4 years before Clinton bounced him, but there wasn't corruption there. Wasn't a big scandal. And in my mind, That's what presidents were. That's what presidents did. They show up and do a few things and go away, and I'm a child. I'm consuming politics. I'm taking all this in. And along comes this bumpkin from Arkansas. He didn't talk like the previous presidents did. He was governor of Arkansas, and I was growing up in Montana at the time. I didn't even, where's Arkansas? Where's Arkansas? He talks different, seemed different, and the dude was just different. And then, of course, the media loved him, not just because he was a Democrat, but because Bill Clinton is probably the greatest politician I've ever seen in my life. His wife's probably the worst. But Bill Clinton, you see him on camera and you know it. The dude is charming. Unbelievably charming. He's famous for walking into gigantic parties and banquets and talking to every person for about 30 to 60 seconds. And then when he walks away, that person feeling like they know him personally. He's famous for it. And then, of course, the scandals started coming out. And this is my introduction to political scandals. You all remember the Monica Lewinsky thing.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
All that was a lie. Isn't that amazing? I know you've seen that video 1,000 times, but each and every word he just said there was a bald-faced lie. And the Clintons just did that. They did it with regularity. And then when they'd be caught for it, they would find a way to scam out of that too. There's a reason they call him Slick Willie. The dude just found a way to slither through politics. That's how they did things. And they emerged from 8 years in the White House. They were worth about two nickels when they went into the White House. Not long after they get out, they're filthy, stinking rich. Now, how does that happen? Anyone want to know why that happens? How that happens? And while they were in politics? Oh, don't think Barack Obama was the first one to use the forces of government against his political opponents. Clintons would ruin lives routinely. All the time, there are so many great stories that come out about it. And when I say great, I realize it's terrible. And there's a real human cost to it. But again, they're the bad guy. And they were great at being the bad guy. And Bill finally gets done, 8 years in office. And he goes back to doing the things Bill Clinton loves to do. And Hillary, always an ambitious woman, dives into politics, becomes a senator from New York, becomes Secretary of State. Runs against Barack Obama. And you forget, Hillary Clinton was supposed to win that primary. And Barack Obama, the young phenom, comes in and bounces her out because Hillary's just awful. Just a terrible person. She's just as dirty as Bill without the personality. Okay, so she loses to Obama. Obama wins. She's going to come back and run against Trump. And it's Donald Trump. I mean, he's this unsophisticated savage. She's gonna beat him, right? No, she isn't. Because deep down, she's still Hillary Clinton. And she's awful.
To just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
Generally, just look, I know I'm not a professional, but just a heads up, in case you feel like running for president one day, it's generally not a good idea to tell the supporters of the other guy that they're a bunch of racist, misogynistic scumbags. That tends to turn people off. It tends to be offensive. She's just the worst. The absolute worst. And remember Benghazi. Speaking about the human cost, do some reading on Benghazi in case you've forgotten. The Obama administration and Hillary Clinton, they lied about everything that happened over there. They lied about why we were there. They lied about the causes of the whole thing. And they left those guys, our brave guys, they left them hanging out to dry. We killed those guys. We didn't give them support at all. And those were our American heroes. And Hillary Clinton, when called and forced to testify about it, this was tender-hearted Hillary.
We were misled that there were supposedly protests, and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
What difference does it make? Of course they got killed and I lied to everybody about it, but who cares? All that's water under the bridge now. They're awful. They're absolutely awful people. We didn't even go into all the stuff they did at the state, or while she was at the State Department. It's just, I miss the Clintons. The leftists now are so boring. They're just vicious and crazy and violent. The Clintons, they made politics fun. You need a good bad guy. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We have a great special for you tonight. All kinds of great guests. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Joining me now, Carrie Lucas of the Independent Women's Voice. Carrie, I am fascinated with the Clintons. Maybe that's because I'm a bad person, but I find bad guys to be more fascinating than good guys most of the time. And I'm fascinated with how this really scummy, dirty, kind of bumpkin family from Arkansas rose to such a level of power. How did they do this? How did the Clintons pull this off?
You know, I think the Clintons practiced for decades how to use the system to enrich themselves. They clearly started in Arkansas and kind of in a more small ball way back when Bill was governor, and to start making money, and really perfected that art over the years, and particularly when Hillary was Secretary of State.
Hillary's Secretary of State tenure still baffles me to this day. It looked so naked, the corruption. It just looked like blatant pay for play while she was Secretary of State. How did they get away with that? Is it just having a media that loves you? Are they just so wired in with DC they're untouchable? How?
You know, it is interesting. I think when you think about what really brought, so many people were amazed at Donald Trump and the kind of wave that brought him in. But I really think that what happened with Hillary Clinton and her tenure at Secretary of State exemplified what Trump talked about the need to drain the swamp. Because you're right, Washington was not at all interested in trying to clean up the mess and the corruption that was exemplified by Hillary Clinton's tenure as the Secretary of State. But did she really get away with it? Because at the end of the day, I think this is a lot of what cost her the election in 2016. It was this sense that she was the ultimate insider rigging the game for herself and her cronies. And that's really what had happened the heart of those scandals is kind of just the swamp at its worst.
Carrie, does that matter? Do people actually care about, I mean, everybody says they care about that, but is it just a personality problem for Hillary? I mean, Bill had that charm. Everybody sees it. Republicans, Democrats, everybody sees it. And Hillary has the personality of a sea urchin.
You know, I'm not going to discount that, because there's certainly truth to that. But I do think that the desire for an outsider and this idea that when Donald Trump was making that case, a lot of people, I think, were aware. And again, it wasn't just about the Clintons. I think the Clintons are a symptom. But you see this today with Joe Biden. You see it with a lot of the heads of the Democratic Party and some Republicans who seem like they have been very willing over the years to talk about the problems and the need to clean up D.C., but then are secretly making millions and millions of dollars in really shady ways. You know, it's one of those things that we all know that members of Congress, what they're supposed to be paid, how much the caps are supposed to be on earnings. And you sit there and say, you wonder, how is it that Harry Reid ends up being a multi-millionaire? How is it that the Bidens are now absolutely, he spent 48 years working for in the Senate, in Congress. How are they so rich? There's something that stinks. And I think a lot of Americans said, enough with this. We'll take a rich guy who got rich in business, but who at least made it, you know, in the business world and not kind of on the backs of taxpayers.
On that, on exactly what you were talking about, does the Hunter Biden stuff actually have any legs when Trump is attacking Biden, when those of us on the right are attacking Biden? I mean, look, Hunter Biden has a laundry list of things you could go after him for, and it's all ugly. The Ukraine stuff was ugly. The China stuff was ugly. All the personal stuff is really ugly. I generally don't get into that, but it's all ugly. Does it have legs, though, with the voters? Do they care, or do they just shrug and be like, he's a politician's kid. Of course, he's a scumbag.
You know, I think it does have some legs. I think that the appeal, if there is appeal for Vice President Biden, it's this desire to return to what's normal. This idea, there's a lot of people out there on the right and the left who, you know, were tired of the drama, wished that the president didn't tweet so much and that things were kind of less contentious. But then I think when they look at what these scandals are and the backdrop of what it is that the Biden family, what is it? What is returning to to normal? Well, a big part of that is returning to this kind of corruption. It's not just, you know, the happy days of the past when everyone was polite to each other. It was a system that allowed a lot of people to operate at a level where they got to play by special rules. That's certainly what happened in the case of Biden and his sons. And his daughter, for that matter, but for the Biden family got special treatment. And I think a lot of people will say, you know, maybe they may not like Trump's tweets, but there is this, you know, they don't necessarily want to go back to the days of this kind of corruption.
Carrie, speaking with Carrie Lucas, everybody, of Independent Women's Voice, Vice President of Independent Women's Voice, what's the Biden-Clinton connection? People assume, we like to assume on the right, all the Democrats get along. I think it's pretty obvious the Bidens and the Obamas are not exactly super close, even though he was his vice president for 8 years. Is there a Biden-Clinton connection at all, or are they just two egotistical families and they just do their own thing?
I don't know enough about the personal dramas among this. It is kind of, you know, it's interesting to look at the different almost families as you would back in the looking back on like the royal days of England with these different warring families among the Democratic Party. But, you know, what interests me is just this, it's not a personal relationship, but it's this kind of two peas in a pod in terms of career politicians who have operated really in a way that is in the interest of their own enrichment. And I think that is when you look at kind of the record of the Clintons, what is their big legacy? And at the end of the day, and I think that when you look at what is it that Biden accomplished in his, you know, again, 48 years this man was in public office, hard to know what he did other than get really stinking rich. And I do think that that's, you know, people when they think back, they'll think that this is really what a lot of what is wrong with Washington is exemplified in these families. And as people kind of in the middle are thinking about what it is they want to restore, you know, I don't know that this is, you know, there's a lot of people who wish that there might be a door number two, but they don't want to go back to what there used to be. And that really is what Biden is offering.
What is Jill Biden to Joe? I see her a lot, and I will tell you personally, I never like hearing from the First Lady too much. I like First Lady to be above it all, help out some school kids, because she's not running for office. Jill Biden's out there a lot. She's doing as many or more interviews than Joe Biden. Is she out there too much? Is she the brains behind all this? Is she just trying to help him out? What is she?
You know, that is a really good question, and I think that is one of the, obviously, this is a bizarre campaign season and election for a lot of reasons, particularly because of the limitations that COVID have placed on this kind of the normal back and forth you'd be seeing with candidates. But I think another reason why this is an unusual election is because one party, the Democrats, are very reticent to allow their candidates to interact with people. They obviously don't want to be asking or taking questions from reporters in any kind of free way. I think you do have Jill Biden, who's trying to be his, you know, get his back, to really be his mouthpiece, because I do think that it seems pretty clear that that Joe Biden isn't interested or able to take on that role at this point. And I people, you know, it's hard to imagine. I know that there's some of the Democrats who seem to be hoping that they can just run out the clock and he won't have to do anything, or have to, people won't have to see him too much. But at some point, people are going to start saying, hey, can we see this guy? You want to, you know, if you, before somebody was going to vote for him, they actually might want to hear a little bit about, you know, his temperament, how he approaches problems, his ability to relate to people and react. These are all completely legitimate decisions. But they don't, they really don't seem to want to go there.
Carrie Lucas, that was outstanding. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Have a good one. Great, thanks. All right. We'll be back. Joining me now, national security analyst Dave Reboy. Dave, the Clintons are an interesting beast. And I will tell you, full disclosure, I've found them to be fascinating. I kind of love the Clintons because they're so scummy. I think they make politics more interesting. Wrestling is only good because of a good heel. And I think the Clintons are the last great bad guy we had. Barack Obama and the new left, they just hate America. That's not fun. The Clintons didn't care. They would just, I don't know, steal some stuff.
I couldn't agree more. These guys are so scummy, and they're so, I mean, just the way they operate is so pay for play and transparent that you almost have to admire their chutzpah. I mean, if they wouldn't have, if they didn't have a D next to their names, and they wouldn't be kind of you know, Democrat royalty, I mean, these guys would have been run out on a rail in the early 90s in Arkansas already.
Explain what happened. So people are going to forget this, because it was any one of 8,000 scandals or made-up scandals under any presidency, it just all gets drowned out by people. Explain Clinton's, Hillary Clinton more specifically, in Libya. What happened?
Well, in a sense, we don't know the full extent of the corruption, but the basic outline is this. I was a big critic of U.S. involvement in Libya, because at the time it was early in 2011, right in the middle of the Arab Spring. So you just had Tunisia fall, and then you had Egypt fall, and there were starting to be stirrings in Syria also. And really, what the Arab Spring was a Muslim Brotherhood takeover of the region, a toppling or attempted toppling of all of either our allies or all of the Arab governments in the region. These guys managed to convince the Clinton State Department and the Obama administration that it would be very good for the US to come out on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood and the protesters on Al Jazeera and the commentators on Al Jazeera by helping depose Gaddafi at the time. Nobody ever had a plan for what to do the next day. This is something that we needed to do, and we needed to do right away, very fast. And Hillary Clinton famously said, "We came, we saw, he died," about Gaddafi. And really what they ended up doing was they ended up bringing back, they ended up collapsing the government completely, creating a vacuum that was filled by slave traders, you know, Islamists. We ended up getting whacked in Benghazi, you know, for something utterly, utterly predictable. Now, at the same time, what ended up happening, and of course, as you remember, and I'm sure your listeners remember, the GOP made a big deal about hearings on Benghazi. It was a phony, baloney sham, because the GOP at the time was not fully prepared to attack Clinton and the Obama administration on what terrible reasons they went in to Libya in the first place, because largely they supported them. So they could always sort of make partisan noise. But some of the things that came out at this time was how Hillary was working with her old buddy Sidney Blumenthal to get contracts in post to get military and oil contracts in post Gaddafi Libya. So you had that going on. You had all kinds of other nonsense going on with the Clinton Foundation subsequently. And it was just a mess, and nobody talks about it. And the GOP doesn't talk about it, which I think is a scandal, because almost every Republican in Congress at that time was lined up in favor of taking out Gaddafi and lined up in favor of that war, and not a single person asked, hey, what happened the next day? And I think that's unforgivable. And thank goodness that it's now 2020. It's almost a decade later, and the GOP is a different party. It was only one guy, really, I think one guy in Congress at the time who opposed the Libya debacle, and it was Alan West. And it was on good, it was, you know, he had a very good argument, which is, you're doing this in the middle of a Muslim Brotherhood revolution. You're contributing to regional instability. But nobody listened to him. Paul Ryan didn't listen, and as you remember from the debate with Mitt Romney, Mitt Romney couldn't criticize Obama for Libya because he supported it every step of the way. So in a way, looking back on Libya is really kind of good, because it makes us appreciate the GOP that we have today under Trump, and the fact that we are more circumspect about military adventures and interventions.
Dave, I understand that you come across well on foreign policy. You know what you're talking about on foreign policy, but you're extremely well-read and educated in all those other things. I'm not. I'm a moron. And even I know that vacuums get filled, like you said earlier. So if I know that, how do all the people, GOP, Democrat, whatever the case may be, with the Princeton degrees and everything, how do they not know that? Because we all like to imagine, whether it's Democrat or Republican, if they're doing something foreign policy-wise, there's been an expert or 10 experts are in the room, and they know this and they know that, and nobody there says we should probably worry about what comes after. How does that happen? How is that possible?
I mean, that's a long story, too. But it has mostly to do with the failure of our expert class. And this is a story that goes back 100 years, going back to the birth of the progressive movement and the administrative state. I mean, at the end of the day, all of these guys end up working in these industries, end up thinking the same things. These are all conventional wisdom bots. And it's like, the more degrees you have, the less common sense you have. And I think they consider themselves essential. They consider themselves the smartest people in the room. I mean, hey, it's all a bunch of Princeton girls with masters and PhDs running around the desert. How much fun could that be? So this is what we have. You know, I mean, you could be cynical and say that this is what happens in a kind of late stage empire situation. Is really what you're describing is more than stupidity. What you're describing is decadence. And it's decadence of the elite class.
That what we are now? We a late stage empire, Dave?
Sure.
Crap. The thing is, I know you're right. I know you're right.
I'm not being triumphant about this. I it's actually quite sad. But I mean, we are able to do wonderful things abroad. For example, just today was the first flight from Tel Aviv to Abu Dhabi. We've been able to make peace in the Middle East, and we can't make peace in Portland. Now, obviously, it's more important to make peace to have kind of domestic tranquility than to have peace in far off lands. But I think the crazy thing is now we realize that it's a lot harder to do so in the United States, because we've come to the place where there's more in common between an Emirati and an Israeli than there is between red states and blue states. And it's a thing that, you know, you and I discuss a lot. But I think this is a really, today is a really good example of how divided we are.
Man. Dave Reboy, awesome as always. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Buck, I have taken the controversial position that we're talking to Buck Sexton. Sometimes I don't introduce my guests, especially when everybody knows them. Buck's radio shows in basically every city in the United States of America, and obviously you watch the first, you know him, so I'm not even introducing him anymore. Anyway, Buck, the Clintons, my take on the Clintons always gets me yelled at, and that's that I miss them. I miss that kind of scumminess in politics, because they're... any great movie, any great book has a great bad guy. It's a fact. And they were fun, great bad guys. Just dirty, blatantly taking foreign payments for things. We're about 90% sure they've had people killed. I mean, everybody jokes about that, but they probably have. They probably have at some point in time. Who knows? It wouldn't surprise anybody. Today's leftists are boring. They're just angry and psychopathic. They're not nearly as fun as Bill and Hillary.
Yeah, well, you also have the problem of making fun of Joe Biden, and I had this all the time. And then I feel a little bad afterwards, kind of. But then I tell myself, like, the nation is at stake, and there's really important things to focus on. But it feels a little bit like when you're, you know, you got to slap around the guy that was getting grabby with your girlfriend at the bar, but, like, you don't need to make him cry in front of everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, he deserves it, but you don't want to totally humiliate the man. You know what I mean? And that's with Biden the problem. With Bill Clinton, he got everything that he deserved and then some.
He did. And of course, the best part is that, I don't know, it sounds like I'm rooting for the guy. I shouldn't. But he got off scot-free. I mean, yeah, I had to go through some public things and stuff like that. Still was a two-term president, widely beloved. He's still out there to cheering crowds no matter what he's tied to. It's amazing. And you're right about Joe Biden. I make fun of him every single day. And every day, as soon as I'm done, I feel bad. It feels like I'm picking on an elderly person who's no longer there, which I guess I am. But he is running to be president of the United States.
Right. I mean, the line between great Mr. Magoo Biden jokes or Weekend at Bernie references and elder abuse with Biden is very narrow, right? It's very thin. So that's one of the problems that we have. But with Bill and Hillary, I always feel like I totally understand your perspective on this. It's in the, you know, some of these cartel movies, whether it's Scarface or whatever, you know, you're kind of rooting for Tony Montana in the end to get away. Yeah. You know, you're sort of, even though he's a drug dealer, and he's a bad guy. Hillary got away with it. You know, the yes. graft, the corruption, the self-dealing, the criminal acts. She got away with all of it. So, you know, you can hate what she stands for, but respect the game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you can make the argument that politician-wise, Bill may be the best we've ever seen, and Hillary might be the worst we've ever seen. Is that out of bounds? I mean, she did blow two presidential elections, both of which she was supposed to win. People only blame her for losing to Trump. They forget she had the nomination all but handed to her, and Barack Obama, some no-name state senator who'd been in the Senate for about 30 seconds, come in and just bounces her right out because she's awful.
Oh, Obama came in and took the cookies right out of Hillary's cookie jar. It couldn't have been any more obvious that was supposed to be hers. And Obama was like, actually, look, the Hillary has never been a person who's been tested in any real way in politics and come out the winner, right? I mean, she's been tested by being in campaigns, but she's never had, I mean, her challenge in New York, it would have been the real test when she was up against Rudy Giuliani, when he was at the peak of his powers post 9/11, after cleaning up New York. Then Giuliani got cancer, had to step aside. And I mean, if you walked around and asked New Yorkers who ran against Hillary for Senate back in the early 2000s, one in 100 would be able to tell you that it was Rick Lazio, right? I mean, no one would remember that. So Hillary had that bit of good luck. Once again, another human being's mortal peril is Hillary Clinton's good luck. Thankfully, Mayor Giuliani came out just fine after his treatment. But look, I think that the Clinton brand, they're going to try to bring it back. You see they're trying to bring back with this Kennedy kid. I mean, I feel like this is someone that Jesse Kelly was giving wedgies to in the locker room like 5 minutes ago, and now this kid Kennedy is running in Massachusetts. I guess he's lost, but now they're deciding whether or not he's actually lost. They love dynasties among the Democrats, and we like them a little too much among Republicans, too, if we're being honest. We need to get rid of this crap.
Do we like – you bring up a great point because I was going to talk to you about this. Do we like monarchies? I mean, we claim to hate them. We are a country that rebelled against one. We had a revolution against one, and screw the king and up yours and we're free. And then the second the queen or somebody gets in some big royal wedding over there, you can't find a woman in this country because they're all glued to the TV watching her dress and, oh my goodness, look at the new princess and all these other things. Do we secretly, is it human nature to want a king?
Yes. I think increasingly we're seeing with the way people have responded to COVID in this country that there is a, and now it's certainly not everyone. I think it's, there's almost a left-right brain separation here between those who wish to be controlled and those who wish to be free. A lot of people like to be told what to do. There are belief systems, there are political ideologies where the whole upside for you is that if you just obey, we'll take care of everything. But you have to obey all the time. That's the whole purpose of it. There are people that like that. People like that in their jobs sometimes, too. I think that the idea of a monarchy does... Look, there's a nostalgia and a... You know, there's a Hollywoodized version of what it means to be in a royal family, right? I mean, if you actually look at someone like Prince Charles, come on. But when you see what they're depicted, how they're depicted, there's this fascination with it. But we do like dynasties in this country. I mean, you look at Bush, Gore, Clinton. Does anyone really think that one of the Obama girls probably isn't going to run? And let's be honest, wouldn't be formidable just based on name recognition if she did. The Kennedy name. I mean, Ted Kennedy was a drunkard, a lecherous lout, like the alliteration there, who drowned a woman in the back of his car in like 3 feet of water. And he became a senator of the Democrat Party for decades. They don't care, man. If you got the big last name, they're good with it. And I worry Republicans are going, and people don't like this for me, because the one thing I will not back off of, the Trump thing with the nepotism, I'm with this president, ride or die on policy, but the nepotism stuff, I can't defend it, and I won't. It's not okay.
It's not okay at some level. On another level, isn't that really how
Come
power
on.
Goes? Now, listen to me. This is what I'm saying. I can't stand Ivanka and Jared, so you're never going to get me to defend them. I think they, every single time Trump does something dumb, it comes out in the end, it's Ivanka and Jared, the two Democrats who are whispering in his ear. So you're never going to get me to defend them. However, nepotism-wise, if you're a man in a position of power, you need advisors. You need advisors you can trust. It's history, man. The king picks his brother to be one of his advisors because his brother won't knife him in the back. What's wrong with that?
Your family is always in an advisory role, right? I mean, that's... But to confer official government salary, status, power on a family member as an appointee... I'm never going to be okay with this. But then again, Jesse, I'm a weirdo because I'm also not okay with people paying other people to write books for them and put their name on them. I think that's unethical. So I'm like, me and many people in conservative media break on a whole bunch of things when you really dig into it. And that's another one. But with the nepotism thing, man, you know, just wait until Hunter Biden is showing up as like Federal Reserve Chairman. You're going to be like, oh. But he trusts him so much because he's his son.
You know what? I envy Hunter Biden. A man with his inclinations having access to that much loose cash, he's going to have an absolute blast of a
Look,
4 years.
Look, let's be real.
All right,
see, you and I will tell people, we'll tell the people the honest truth, Jesse. Would Hunter Biden be a fun guy to go out with, you know, and party a bit with?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
100%. 100%. Without hesitation, I would go out and party with Hunter Biden all night long. If you don't have friends that make bad decisions, you're boring.
There you go. It's a truism. Another one from Jesse Kelly. We should get a t-shirt with that on it.
I should. Buck Sexton of the Buck Sexton Show. Thank you, my brother.
Good to see you, Jesse.
All right, I'm going to lay off the Clintons now. I understand that's the past. It's time to look forward. We got Joe Biden. We have a whole new generation of lefty whack job socialists. But I'm allowed to miss the Clintons. You're allowed to miss them a little. I don't expect you to write me and tell me you agree. I know you hate them. Like, I don't like them either. But, man, talk about the best bad guys ever. Have a good one.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? Usually my drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is an iHeart podcast.